Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where you'll get actionable tips and advice on major gifts, direct response fundraising, legacy giving, and much more from leading experts in the nonprofit sector. Now, here are your hosts of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, Andrew Olson and Roy Jones.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. This is Andrew Olson with the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Roy Jones.
Hey, how are you, Andrew? I'm glad to be with you again today. It should be fun. I promise it's not going to turn into a fist fight. We're going to find out what an old Republican like me and this young hotshot DNC superstar have in common. So it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited about this too. Our guest today is Colin Ward. Colin comes to us. He's actually a senior vice president at Newport One, so colleague of mine at this point, but most recently has led the marketing operation at the Democratic National Convention. Colin, you want to take a minute to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Thank you. First, thank you both for having me. I'm excited. I promise. No fighting. It's a new day. We just had an election. So
that's exactly right.
Briefly, you know, about me. Wow. Where do I start? I started my career back on the corporate marketing side, actually doing corporate marketing back in the day, doing that. And then about 10 years ago, decided, you know, hey, why not make a change? I was kind of done with the corporate world, more interested in trying to make the world a better place. Moved to DC about 10 years ago. I've never looked back. I started on the consulting side and then made that switch to the client side, working at the Democratic National Committee. And then for an international relief organization called Women for Women International. And now I'm back to the dark side, back consulting.
Well, thanks for joining us. You know, just to let all the listeners know, really what we wanted to talk with you about and hear from you is kind of getting an understanding of what you think, having been on both sides of this coin, what you think nonprofit fundraisers and marketers can stand to learn from those that operate in the political sphere. And then conversely, what do you think those who are political fundraisers and marketers, you know, what's the opportunity for them to learn from what's going on in the nonprofit sector? So that's really what we want to talk about today, unless you have any other direction you want to take this. I don't know. You good with this agenda?
Yeah, I'm good with it. I could rant for hours about Russian hacking, but I don't think, you know, there's not a lot we can do about that right
That's
now.
That's a whole different podcast.
It is. That would take up, you know, hours actually. So
I'd be curious to hear from you, you know, given your time at the DNC and first of all, tell us a little bit more about, you know, what exactly you were responsible for when you were at the DNC, just to give everybody kind of an understanding there.
Yeah. So at the DNC, you know, they give out these kind of sometimes vague titles. I think they're even more vague now that I've left. But director of marketing kind of encompassed basically all that grassroots fundraising. We did have a separate digital division, but my team did kind of take on some digital work, specifically when it came to fundraising and our audience. But that meant I was in charge of, you know, all the direct mail, telemarketing. We did a lot of kind of innovative testing with some digital retargeting of those same audiences too. Try to take on a bit more of the fundraising, some of the emails that were specifically targeted to our audience, just because we found that, like many organizations, our data was very siloed and we just wanted to make sure there was this cohesive strategy. So that's the bulk of our kind of the very high level view of what I was over. It also meant working with some brilliant minds. We on the data science team, we had a great data science team who were obviously there building all types of models for GeoTV and those types of things, but we got access to them and really working with them to do a lot of great just modeling and just cool data stuff. So
on that note, tell me a little bit about what your experience has been, what the biggest differences are that you see in how political organizations manage and leverage data versus the nonprofit space, and what could we take away from that?
I will say, I mean, data is significantly more important. And I think the great thing at the DNC, and I think this goes back, you know, to 2008, even prior than that, it is a data culture and a data-driven culture. And the organization actively makes, you know, investments in data and building that culture. You know, there's not too many organizations out there where you have actual PhD data scientists working for the organization. That was the great benefit of working at the DNC on top of we're sitting on tons and tons of data. I mean, you're just massive amounts of data when you take a look at the voter file, which is where we primarily, what we primarily use to acquisition. You know, we still have an outside list strategy and those things, and that comes into play. But most importantly is the voter file and building a strong model that actually finds us good prospects off of that voter file. And then beyond there, it was great for them to then start building additional models. You know, obviously our house file is large, targeting everyone, you know, especially in specific years, didn't make sense financially. And so really kind of figuring out, you know, a good house model that would work, models to, you know, acquire sustainers, some of those other things. But the great thing was I had access to all that internally. Not to say that most nonprofits out there don't have access to it. They do, just through outside partners, and it's available to them. But I was able to kind of, you know, be actively involved with those teams as they built those models.
As you lay out all those different verticals, it's interesting to me how important integrated communication is at the DNC. And of course, that's the hot button in the nonprofit industry today.
Yeah.
So Colin, what would you say, you know, to the average nonprofit listener who says, well, wait a minute, I don't have a voter file. I don't have, you know, six PhD statisticians on my payroll. I don't even know where to start. Like, scale it down for us. And in your mind, what's an acceptable place or the optimal place even for the average nonprofit to start thinking about how they might be smarter with data?
Yeah, absolutely. And they can be. I mean, that's the great thing. And I think that's why it's an exciting time. You know, it's there's more and more tools available to organizations of all sizes. You don't have to be, you know, huge like the DNC, have access to these things. There's some great, you know, your co-op partners that most organizations are working with on the acquisition side. They offer so many different models that are not just acquisition. Of course, you know, everyone I think is just using them for acquisition and used to that. But even we worked with them because they had a great resource that we didn't have, which was donor data. And of course, like, yeah, we were sitting on this voter file, but not outside donor data. And so building partnerships with them to get access to that donor data that our internal modelers added. But also through them, we even tested outside voter file models that they built for us. And everyone has first party data, right? Like, yeah, it's not a massive amount of data like the voter file, but everyone's sitting on some type of first party data. And it's really being thoughtful of going through and finding what you're sitting on and really creating a testing plan of testing different things and allowing yourself to fail greatly. I mean, trust me, we tested some things that I thought were going to be the coolest models out there. And it was just a big fat waste of money.
What was your biggest flop?
Oh, where do I start? There was many, and one is not, I'm surprised one's not popping in my head. I want to say we tested like an upgrade model that didn't quite work well for us, but I've tested it for other organizations and it's worked well and it was an outside model. Mm-hmm. I will say like, that's the other thing is not all organizations are equal too, right? Like, so you have to test various different ones, and we worked with every single outside, you know, co-op that you could name that would work with us. some are more on the conservative side. And so don't, but there's a lot of value and resources that they can bring to any type of organization. And I went to an organization, you know, Women for Women International is medium sized at best, doesn't have the huge budget, has kind of had their own internal struggles just as far as being able to ramp up quickly. And so really kind of reaching out to some of the same exact partners I did at the DNC and being able to utilize them and knowing that I could is half the battle. But really just, I would say the importance is investing in that and really building a culture where data is important and you have access to data. That's key. You know, I think even the DNC suffered from it. We had data sources all over, siloed. You know, it's everyone's complaint. It's living in, you know, 10 different databases and getting all of that data into one source so you can truly get that kind of 360 view of that donor is important, but a lot of investment.
So, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking for the average nonprofit, they can certainly do this at a lower, lesser scale for the most part, but the argument needs to be made still, or I guess the case rather, to executives, to a board. Yes, there's risk in doing some of this, right? There's risk in investing in models. There's risk in investing in you know, consolidating all this data and warehousing all this data and starting to use it differently and really in the testing, right? What do you say to an organization that's on the bubble trying to figure out, like, how do we do this? How do we convince our executives to take this on and jump into more sophisticated testing like this? What would you recommend?
So I think that's where you have to be a bit of, you know, that champion for your program and kind of have those conversations and be willing to have those tough conversations and openly admit and say, look, we're gonna specifically budget X amount for some innovative testing and thinking, and not everything we do is gonna be super successful. Not at least right at the gate. But there's still learnings in that, right? Even when you fail, you learn. You learn at least what not to do in the future. So there's that. I mean, and a good example, not political, but you know, when I was at Women for Women, we tested. We knew that part of the core of the program was the sponsorship program, which they had, and you could sponsor a woman that was in their program for $35 a month. You know, our the highest lifetime value were coming from a lot of the co-ops out of our acquisition. Those were eventually turning into, you know, where we're our sponsor, that was kind of our funnel for our sponsorship recruitment. Well, I said, let's test them right out of the gate. We have a sponsorship recruitment coming up. Let's reach out to the co-op partners and we'll test them right out of the gate. Well, it didn't work. I mean, because what we learned is, you know, you got to bring them on, make them a first time donor first, and then walk through and explain what that sponsorship program is, you know, how it works. And that takes sometimes, you know, I'm blanking off the top of my head, but it usually was taking about like, I calculated like 13 months or something like that to actually convince these first time donors, they first support the organization and then become a, you know, sponsor. So I think that I say that because like it was not a success. We had many other successes, both at the DNC, but we had, like I mentioned, many failures, but you have to at least convince your leadership to budget, allow you to budget responsibly for some risk. Obviously your goal is not to waste money, but I think any good organization should be budgeting responsibly for some testing and to take some risks.
That makes good sense. Would you say that learning how to leverage data most effectively is one of the biggest things that a nonprofit organization could learn from the way political operations work?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's key. I think big data has been thrown around for how many years now, but I still think most people don't really understand what it is.
Yeah.
Or what's with it. I think there is access to so much data, but I think it's truly understanding how to leverage it. And then creatively look at your own data and how you leverage it as well. You know, I mean, as you can imagine, a good example of that was at the DNC, you know, I just had this great idea. Of course, we emailed the heck out of people like, you know, any good political organization does. But with that, you have a high rate of unsubscribes. And so you lose those people, you know, once they unsubscribe and you can't really target them. So we took our online only donors who unsubscribed. You know, we worked with our co-op partners to be like, let's see if they're giving in other channels, you know, based on what your guys' data is. We threw them in the mail and they started giving again, but through the mail. So now they're a multi-channel donor. Whereas, you know, once they were, you know, just giving online and then stopped because they unsubscribed, it was actually a successful test. Now, you know, what we discovered is the farther back we went and unsubscribed. So people who unsubscribed, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago actually performed even better than the recent unsubscribed.
Huh.
Probably makes sense. They're recently pissed off at you.
Sure. That makes sense. What would you say are sort of, you know, maybe the two or three other big ahas that you had on the political side that you think most nonprofits maybe aren't thinking about or could really benefit from?
I would say, so probably on the flip of that is I learned that, and not that I never thought it was unreal, but I learned that, you know, donor fatigue, it's a real thing. It's legit. I mean, you can really burn out your donors, but I think it comes up from a result of treating your donors like an ATM and just constantly hitting them up for money. It kind of comes from a result of bad messaging too. You know, you're not explaining to your donors, you're not treating them like an investor. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're investing in your organization, in your mission. And if you don't do that and all they are is an ATM to you and you're just hitting up for money constantly, and you're going to see that retention just start to tank because they're not going to stick around and they're just going to be annoyed with you. And it doesn't matter, you know, how great your data is or how strategic you are, they're just done. So I think, you know, that's where cultivation comes into play and is truly important. And really that powerful messaging of saying, hey, you're giving us, you know, 5, 10, 15, 25 to thousands of dollars. And that's really important. And we thank you. Here's how we're putting that money to work and how we're putting it to use. And making sure you're reinforcing that message over and over again, I think is truly important.
Hey, Roy, did you guys see when you were working on the political side of things, kind of a similar trend there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and Colin will want to speak to this, but I mean, I like to think about it as using the high tech approach, the big data. But you know, when you do the modeling, when you score a file, whether it's a donor file or a combination of things, what are the practical takeaways? I mean, would there be people that you invite to events first? Would there be, of course, different messaging based upon those with higher capacity? What are some examples of that, Colin, that you guys use?
Yeah, so I think it was a combination of that and the data. We really, you know, I think there can be this fallacy where the data is the strategy almost, if that makes sense. It's just a part of the strategy. And the data, like, I think there's also this fallacy that these data models are going to be the end-all be-all, but the data and the model is a piece of it. The person interpreting it is just as important. Having someone interpret and say, okay, here's what we do with that data. Like if we're targeting and our strategy is to upgrade giving, can we identify people who, you know, whose behavior has shown that they have the potential to upgrade? If it's kind of more issue based, and we would do a lot of that, you know, how many people have taken, you know, X amount of issue actions online that signed a petition when it came to, you know, voting rights, when it came to LGBT issues, you know, and so then that would start informing our messaging and how we would talk to them. It wouldn't be the only thing we talk to them about, but it would be, you know, maybe at that top of the list.
Right.
So that's where we would get kind of more enhanced with just the segmentation, but B, with just customizing that message a bit more to speak to that individual donor.
That's good. Andrew and I worked together at a previous agency, and I always drove him crazy because I would take this data and knowing that for my clients on the nonprofit side to use it, I really got to dumb it down. I got to give them some things that they're going to do with this segment and this segment and this segment and this segment. And, you know, and it might include, you know, certain people approaching on social media and other people reaching out for a face-to-face meeting and other people, you know, they need to get a phone call or a handwritten note. And then, you know, in some folks, you're going to move from one direct mail treatment to another. You take all this amazing information, but it's coming up with the actionable tasks or triggers that to apply it. That was always the hard part.
Right. Yes. And I think it still is. I think it, you know, like I said, it helps kind of help spur ideas, I think. And that's where the analytics really comes in. And I probably was that obnoxious client that would just dive deep into analytics because I'm a nerd that way. I would just try to find, you know, little kind of key things and key segments and what was working and what wasn't. One example is that was an outside co-op that built an acquisition model for us based on the voter file. It didn't beat our house model based off of, you know, the initial revenue and response rate, but where it was killing our house model was on the long-term value. Okay, there's still a place for it. Let's not drop it completely, because now we kind of have that two-pronged strategy where, you know, we were going into a 2016 election. We need to build that file up as big as we can. But also, we're the DNC, we don't shut down after election day.
No, that's right.
Some donors that are going to stick around. And so it informs the strategy, and then it develops, you know, into a more kind of two-pronged strategy of, let's target these donors with this high lifetime value. There's a place for this model, but we also need to grow this file big. So there's a place, you know, obviously for our house model.
Good stuff.
Hey, Colin, I'm curious to get your take on this. So a lot is changing in our industry. And it feels to me like every few days things are changing, right? There's new technology coming online. There's, you know, ABC different organizations, different companies coming out with white papers on, you know, what's going to happen in the industry, what the forecast is, what we're seeing in trends. I'd be curious to hear from you. What are you, sort of two-part question, what are you most excited about for the next, you know, coming couple of years in our industry? And what do you see as the biggest risks coming at the nonprofit industry?
Yeah, so what I'm excited about, I mean, it truly is that tech. Like, technology is transforming, you know, all industries, and we're no exception. I think at one point, obviously back in the day, people thought that was email killing direct mail. That is not the case. I think what it's done though is forced us to, you know, think better about how they work together, not how they just work separately, and playing into the strengths and weaknesses to each. You know, I think what is great is there's so much new kind of techie tools out there to make the, like, and like I said, I default to my data geek mode, and more accessible. And it's that kind of, to use the buzzwords of the tech industry, that democratization of data, you know, I think is key, because gaining access to all the different data that your organization has, and most people don't even, you know, can't even sometimes fathom like how much data they're sitting on. You know, if you're doing events, if you know, the social, all your data from social media, all your online data, offline data, like it just is, it's huge. And what you can do with that if it's all living in one place. And there's a lot of great technology out there that is now making that possible, even for nonprofits to tap into, you know, at a lower price point, and a lot of great CRMs and systems out there that are making that, just, you know, kind of breaking down those silos as well. It also is important. I put this like big but on that. Those tools, while they're becoming more affordable, still require an incredible amount of commitment and an incredible investment to implement across an organization. And sometimes I think organizations get exhausted by it because it takes time and money and a real commitment by the organization to do it. Some of the risks that I see out there are just complacency, honestly. I mean, it's because things are changing. I think some people, there's, you know, it's comfortable to kind of stay the same and continue doing the same things over and over again instead of adapting. But your donors are living in a very different world now, and you need to be adapting and thinking like them is so, you know, and that's the one thing at DNC, I mean, we would do regular focus group testing and everything else. It's so important to talk to your donors. Like, it just make that investment. And again, those are one of those things you can scale up or down from a simple online survey, something more robust like a focus group. But it's just something that is so important because you constantly need to remind yourself, you are not your target audience. Live like your donor. And not only that, we just get so wrapped up in our organizations or just our processes that we tend to forget it. You know, we tend to think that our donor opens every email that they get and that they open every mail piece that they get. And there's not a bit of truth to that. And I think these worlds of just direct mail and email and digital advertising and just all the tools available to you, from your website to blogs to everything else to social media. Like, there's so much at your fingertips. That's why I think it's just a super exciting time just to be in this space. There's tons of data now available to help you do your job better too.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Roy, do you have any
no, answers to this point? You know, I really is. I mean, the same techniques that we use on the nonprofit side are used in politics and vice versa. You know, the same techniques, equipment, tools in politics are used in the nonprofit world. The challenge with me, and you touched on it, Colin, is you know, how you scale it. You know, with 2 million nonprofits in the United States, you know, most of them are functioning on not budgets of millions, but budgets of thousands. And that usually means, I guess it's similar to candidates, you know, at the local level, congressional level, state level, and then the national level. You know, it's, we got to kind of think about how we take these tools and apply them at each level.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, you know, like I said, there's some, with more and more competition out there for a lot of, you know, different kind of tools and CRM systems that can help you do a lot of these things, I think it will be progressively come more available to smaller organizations. but it's also when you're smaller to kind of, you know, or any organization, depending on when you're tackling, you know, finding what best makes sense for you. And I will say, you know, I was at an organization that was smaller and they decided to take on a tool that was extremely powerful and a great tool. In fact, it's used on the commercial side. I'm not going to name it because I'll be agnostic. It comes to all the great tools out there, but it was extremely expensive and probably a bit overkill for the size of the organization. So you need to just be mindful and really do your due diligence when you're looking at all the great stuff and all the great technology that's available out there, including the data, because even some of the data stuff that's out there is extremely expensive and it may not work. So start small. Mm. Like I said, when you start building a testing budget, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, start with a huge, huge investment. Start small and then just kind of begin to slowly scale up.
I feel like we even see that, you know, on the CRM decision making, right? So you've probably seen this too. I mean, I've come across so many organizations where it's like, wow, you have 2,200 names in your database and you went out and bought the first or second most expensive CRM tool. Now, great, you have all the functionality in the world, but you probably can't take advantage of it for the next 7 years.
Yeah, you are literally using a tool that Coca-Cola and some of the biggest corporations out there are using, yet exactly. You just don't have, you're not sitting on that kind of, you can't use it to its full extent. And so it can be some wasted money in it. You're exactly right. I mean, I've been advising more and more clients on picking the right CRMs, you know, each and every day, because there are a lot out there. But yeah, it's I went through that process myself and learned firsthand. Just
yes, and sometimes learning
financial. Yes, yeah, and it was.
So we're about out of time, Colin. But I just before we let you go, we're going into obviously like you know the most critical 6 or 7 weeks of the fundraising year. Right?
Yes.
If you had one or two words of wisdom to share with listeners, what would you tell people about, you know, how to focus the remaining time of their year?
Other than have a glass of wine in your hand. you know, year end is critical. Honestly, you know, even obviously November, like it starts earlier and earlier. So, you know, you should have your plan set in place by the end of summer. You should have the amount of learnings and testing before summer even ends to be pulling from and putting to use in your end. And I would say though, test. Don't go out there and do a new crazy test. Don't go out and make crazy decisions like implement a new CRM or ESP or bring on a new agency during this time. Probably not the best idea. But you know, like implement some learnings and then some safe tests, things that you know are things that safe are new to try. Like figure them out. And honestly, you know, what most of this industry is about is seeing what, you know, the cool kids are doing and the ones that are being successful at doing it and then testing it out and seeing how it works for yourself. So, you know, maybe that's being a bit more aggressive this year than you were last year, you know, adding an additional email into your series, you know, doing a homepage takeover, you know, for the last week instead of the last 3 days of the year, just playing with little things like that, I think is key that gives you learnings and that can, for all those following years, but just have, you know, a huge impact on your year end to make it even more successful.
Awesome. Yeah,
it really is kind of just like you ramp up before election day, your frequency, your messaging, all that kind of stuff. As you move to year end, you have to do a very similar thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for campaigns, their year end is election day. Now for, you know, nonprofits, obviously it's not the election time, but it's, you know, year end is there every year and then you get to take advantage of it. And it's a key season. So.
Cool. Colin, thank you so much for being here with us today. Appreciate you making the time and sharing your insight with us. How can folks reach you if they have questions for you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Colin Dean Ward. You can find me or, you know, shoot me an email, CWARD@newport1.com, and feel free to reach out. All types of advice, especially CRM advice.
Awesome. Dude, thanks again for being here. Really appreciate
it. And no fights.
No fights. We'll save the fights for when we turn the recorder off.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, brought to you exclusively by Newport One. Newport One can make a difference in your fundraising so that you can change the world. You can always reach us at podcast@newportone.com. Please take a moment to rate this episode on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. When you rate this episode, It will help more nonprofit leaders just like you to help find us and get the information that they need to raise more funds for their organization. Thanks again for listening today.